Well, it's 5:39. Would you, we can call to order. Everybody is ready to go.
Sounds like a plan.
Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Let's call to order then. Our first, our first item is the approval of the October board agenda. Did everyone get a chance to review that?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Move to approve.
Second.
Second.
Any all in favor? Sorry.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay.
Roll call vote. Carla?
Yes. Yep.
Denise?
Yes.
And Christy?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay.
My goodness.
Off to a good start.
Yes.
Okay. Now, of course, we have the public comment item. Do we have anything from the public? And I do recall last meeting we had somebody that wanted to talk. Is that person joining us at all? Or
no. San Bernardino does not have any
okay
public this time.
Okay.
Nor does El Centro.
Okay. All right. So our number, our fourth item, Roman numeral four, board recruitment dialogue. I think Mr. McFadden, if you would like to take the lead on this discussion. Okay. I would appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted to get some intentional time for us to just talk and think and plan around this issue of board recruitment. As I talked with Doreen earlier in the week, and I was saying to her, I really have some uncomfortable feelings about us being in a position of not being able to possibly transact business because of not having a sufficient number of individuals to act. With Dilda's departure, it really limits us to really the notion of three action decisions. And if one of you happens to have another priority for one reason or the other, it puts us in a position of not being able to transact business. And that I think is something we don't want our authorizer to see, is that we weren't able to transact business for any significant number of meetings. And so if it pleases everyone, if we could take about maybe 15, 20 minutes or so, just to talk maybe more in depth about this issue of a board recruitment and the specific type of talent that we may look at regarding prospects for the board. Doreen, if you will just maybe share your screen and we can look at maybe a form. And if not, I can do mine, either one. Oh, there you go. There you go.
There we are.
Okay.
Jill, have you reached out to Elizabeth at all recently?
I have not reached out to her in a couple of months. I did a while back reach out to her, and it still was not necessarily a good time for her. And okay. So I haven't gone back again.
And so was she dealing with her mom?
Yes, yeah, okay. Yeah. So, you know, I know that is a difficult situation. Sometimes it kind of brings her to tears, in terms of kind of just the care management side of it. So I just have not pushed too too much on that.
Oh, I totally understand. And it's not really easy with the COVID stuff right now. So
right.
So we will get there.
You know, I was just doing, and there's no givens to this, but I was just trying to maybe create an organized way for us to maybe look at what some talent areas might be in regards to who we might approach, and just kind of open up our thinking a bit in regard to possible prospects. A couple of things that I think are important for us to do is think about, number one, where we might reach out in terms of trying to identify talent. And I mean, if you could just take that up for just a little bit at the bottom. The second thing is for us to think about, really as a board, you know, the issue of diversity in terms of our board composition and the issue of geographic representation. And we started the schools in El Centro. And so we've got a few more board members from El Centro, but we really need to kind of grow the board now to have a balance in terms of representation. And so I just wanted to, first of all, ask you guys if the categories that we've got up here are broad enough for us to really maybe think about prospects. One area is really taking a look at retired public servants, folks like judges, doctors, healthcare professionals, et cetera, that we might think about. another area is really the whole the disciplines of, you know, legal and financial professionals to be a part of our board body. Third area is really education professionals. They could be retired education professionals or active education professionals, but folks that would share in the values of really educating young children. And then the fourth area was business leaders. And business leaders could be in the form of individuals from not only running businesses, but individuals that are a part of, service clubs that basically have a lot of individuals within them that are business leaders as well. So it was these four areas that just came to my mind. And if there are other areas that you guys can think of, then I'd be really happy for you to help share in where we think there may be another area that we might be missing in terms of a discipline. So there's nothing absolute about this. It's just to give some general ideas as a starting point. And if these are reasonably good places to start, then maybe what we could do is the thought being, and someone was a part of a retreat that I was at back in August. And one of the kind of nuggets that we took away, because we talked about board recruitment and board development. And one of the nuggets that we took away was that, you know, often when we ask individuals, basically we ask people that are close to us, and what we ask them is, will they or won't they be a part of a board? And the thought is that, you know, it may very well be that they can't be a part of a board, but they know someone that shares the values that you have and that they have for service. And the question is not just will you serve, but if you are not available to serve, can you identify for me maybe one or two individuals that would fit the values and the focus that we have at Ballington overall? So maybe the first criteria that we look for a board member, someone that shares our values, someone that is really interested in what we do, and someone that basically has some availability. So with that, I just wanted to open it up, and maybe what we could do is go, we can go area by area, or we can move across, but in the text boxes that you see, what I'd like to be able to do is, for example, in San Bernardino and in El Centro, does anyone know an individual that may be a retired, judge or doctor that we might look at, consider? And we're brainstorming right now. So basically, as long as they fit basically within the geographic regions that we have our schools, and secondly, that basically they share an interest, we think genuinely, in children and the education and development of young children, that would be kind of the beginning criteria. So just asking, does anyone, and I'm gonna leave this open to basically not only board members, but staff as well. So if we start with, let's say, the box up top in terms of the retired public service individuals, anyone have some thoughts about individuals that might be appropriate?
Last time when we had a meeting, I was going to send out blanket emails to some of my service clubs. Actually, I didn't do that, but I talked to several people that we were looking for board members. And the response I got from most of them was, can we wait with that to after the election? Because there's a lot of school boards going on, you know, running for school boards and different things. So that's the advice I got. Why don't you just send out, you know, maybe a day after the elections, and then some of them that really ran for school boards would be interested to and didn't get it, would be interested to, you know, for our board.
You know, and maybe what we're doing, hold on, Doreen, hold on. Okay, maybe what we're doing is we may wait until after the election is over with, but we've got our hit list or our target list in terms of who those individuals might be. And so what I'm trying to have us think about is who might be some of the people, whether it's after the election or after Christmas or Thanksgiving, but who are some of the people that we think that are in this area of public servants that we think might be a prospect for us, and just a name of someone. Denise, anybody that you know that might be, I know you don't hang out with the retired group, you know, I know that, you know, but your community, you do know folk in your community that may be retired neighbors or others that are, again, public servants, judges, doctors, public defenders, et cetera, that might be a resource here. Anyone you can think of?
You know, when it comes to the school side, the only thing that prevents me from reaching out to some of the teachers that I've known or even other prior school board members for the public schools, their view on charter school, you know, and I'm ready to have that debate with them because I'm sure that's what'll come up. And that's going to be, I'm sure a lot of you know Steve Walker. I don't believe he made the last cut that he ran for the school board at Central High School, but I've worked with him for years and he's coached soccer. He's currently he's an attorney. He's not retired, but he would be my recommendation for that category. Again, even though he's not retired, he's not a judge, but he has served on the school board for many, many years in El Centro.
Denise, Joe and I already talked to him. He's not interested.
Okay.
And his
I would say, Denise, seriously, don't let their position on charter schools be a barrier, because I believe in slow walking people down. Okay. And I believe information brings about awareness. And
right.
We have a number of ways that we can, even in this COVID environment, we can do some wonderful things that Shannon's doing and Bill are doing. We can do some virtual education with folks. And so don't let that be a barrier. If you think there's a teacher out there that loves kids and really values education, then let's put them up here as somebody to talk to. Okay. So if you've got a name, let's think about it. Okay.
Okay.
Christy, Shannon, what do you have a name of someone that we might put on our short list of people to talk to? And again, we're not just talking to them about yes or no. We're creating a conversation for you to have. Well, I'm really busy right now. You know, I've got this, that, and the other. Great. Who do you know, okay, that would be someone that we could talk to? So it's a two-part discussion in that regard. Anyone?
I referred Doreen to him. A local business owner in San Bernardino. His name is Carl Dameron. He owns Dameron Communications, very successful communications and marketing company in San Bernardino. And we talked a little bit last spring about it, but then everything went haywire. Okay. And I know that Doreen reached out to try to connect to him last week as well.
Okay.
I've put some feelers out in an organization called New Leaders Council, of which I was a fellow, I think maybe 6 years ago, 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. And first of all, I ran into the same thing. Everybody in that group is very politically active. And so I got the same response as others did of, hey, can we talk about this after the election? Mm-hmm. But the other thing was that most of the people that I was thinking of, and I don't know why I didn't think about this before, but most of the people I was thinking of are really passionate about charter schools. They're either teachers or principals at charter schools. Mm-hmm. And so what I did was, put feelers out. Do you know anybody? Because number one, most of the people I know are in LA and most of them are already working at a charter school and would, it would be weird for them to be on the board of another charter school. At least that was the discussion that I had with at least two people. What I did was I asked to put feelers out for anybody they know closer to San Bernardino, closer to the Inland Empire, that would, that would fit the bill. You know, someone that that has mentored them, or someone that they've met through any of the various groups that they're with. Mm-hmm. The other thing, I've got to get her last name or name. There's a woman named Amy that works with San Bernardino County Transportation Authority that I was on a board of a transportation organization with her. And she is, I don't know if she's an attorney, but she works in, I think she is an attorney, but she works in the legal department for the transportation authority. And after working with her, I think she would be fabulous for something like this, but I haven't had the conversation with her yet.
Okay.
But I will. Her first name is Amy. And that kind of got me thinking that there might be other people in San Bernardino County either in the building division or transportation authority that might be interested in something like this. I just kind of have to ask around, I think.
Okay.
And Christy just actually made a light bulb go on over my head. We have neighbors to the south and to the west of the school building that are county buildings. Mm. And I have intentionally engaged them over the years, you know, Halloween and Christmas, and they help with an evacuation, things like that. And just recently I had somebody reach out to help with parking during the election. And so it's striking me, I could probably walk on over. I mean, we're on a first name basis. Mm-hmm. I can just walk into the building and most of them know who I am. I can have that conversation and see if anybody might be interested, or like Mr. McFadden, like you were saying, if they might know of anybody who right. might be interested.
Right, right. Okay. I think that would be a great piece. You know, from legal, I want to put a name down here. Greg Tavel, T-A-V-I-L-L. And he is a presiding judge in the San Bernardino area in the youth, on the youth side. And he probably would not have time. He actually was on our board of directors with Volunteers of America for many years, but he wouldn't have time as a presiding judge, and it probably would be a conflict of interest as a judge to sit on, you know, a board of this nature. But he could probably direct me to retired judges, okay? And that, and retired prosecutors or things of that nature that might be helpful. So I'll put that down. Carla, what about you know, in El Centro there? I know we have reached out to some people over time, but is there a name of a person that we might put on this list, either that might work for IID, that might work for the county, you know, retired from the county, that we might look at?
Well, the accountant from the assessor's office, the county controller, he just retired.
Okay.
He's a CPA. And actually, I worked with him at Hutchinson and Bloodgood years and years and years ago. But I mean, he was the auditor controller for many years when he retired. I can ask him.
Okay. And he's the county, you say county comptroller?
Yes.
Okay.
Another one I was thinking about, I think her kids are going at Ballanton, Lily Garcia. She's a business leader.
Okay.
Do you know her, Doreen?
I know her, Carla. Her daughter is in first grade this year.
She is very outspoken, and actually I got her on the chamber board, and really nice personality and very outspoken and very interested in community affairs.
I would love to have more parents on the board.
I
can definitely ask her. I haven't asked her because I think I just recently found out that her children were at Ballanton.
Shannon, do you have a site council there? Is there anyone that might be a prospect that we could look at talking to?
I am so sorry. There's a dog barking in the background. I apologize. We don't have a school site council right now. It was disbanded because of a law that was changed last year. I want to be, there are some parents we could reach out to. I think I would want to discuss with Doreen some specifics before I put any names out there, because I want to make sure that I'm not putting any parents in a tough spot. Okay. And I'm sorry, I'm speaking slowly because I'm thinking of these parents in my head as we go, of those that would have the knowledge. We do have one parent. She was actually on our video for the renewal, and she works for First Five.
Okay. What is First Five?
First Five is the state, Doreen, I don't know the word to use, the state department, I guess, that supports childhood programs from birth to age five.
Right, early childhood development, yeah, up through school readiness. Yeah.
So that might be one. Her name is Crystal Valdez, and I think she would be open to it.
Let's put her down in terms of, we can, right now we can sort it out, but it's a parent, and we can work with that. Parent educator.
The auditor controller's name is Doc Newland.
Okay.
Did I get the last name right?
Newland.
Oh.
New and land. Newland.
Okay. Okay, Newland. Okay. Under this category of business leaders, I want to put Bobby Brock under there. And I'm not talking about for him servicing on the board. He owes us. He owes me a name. Okay. And I'm not letting him get away in terms of it. And he knows everybody, you know, just about everybody at any rate. But I think, Carla, we need to have lunch with Bobby.
Sure, we can do that.
And really get him to, again, give us the lead on a couple of opportunities. Guys, I'm not going to take up too much more time, but I just say that I really would like to email this chart to you, each of you, and have you write in, think about and write in possibly some additional individuals that you think it would be important for us to talk to. And then we could feed that back into Doreen or myself, and then we'll flush this out, because I think it's really gonna be important. I know we're headed toward the holiday season. I know we've got elections going. So it may very well be that we are not really moving on this in a significant way until the period of time between really Thanksgiving and maybe the first 2 weeks in December, to try to have maybe, and I'm calling them meet and greet Zoom coffee, okay? And that's all we're doing, is having a 15 or 20 minute Zoom meet and greet with them. So if you would, Doreen and I will work to get the illustration out to you. If you write a couple of additional names in it, we will pull this together, and then we can talk about next steps, okay?
Okay.
All righty. All right.
Gail, can you do me a favor?
Sure.
Can you write a little blurb, like 10 lines or something, I can send out with the email? Because then I'll send blast out emails to my Rotary, my Through Optimist, my different boards, my hospital board, my IVDC board, and just blast it out and see if anybody want to join.
I will pull that together, and I will circulate that for everybody in terms of it. Christy as well as Denise in terms mm-hmm. of it, so that kind of maybe is a why serve on Ballington's board, So Doreen and I'll work that through and I'll get something out to you shortly. Okay. Wonderful. Okay.
That'd be great.
I will definitely do that. Guys, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And like I said, we just need to work it. I believe there's a person out there that really wants to say yes to us. All we've got to do is put it in front of them and create the opportunity for them to say yes. And we'll do that. Okay. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Madam Chair, I'm going to give it back to you now.
All right. Thank you, sir. That was a good discussion. Let's go ahead and move on to item 5, revenue generation and cash management, fiscal year 2020-21. And I'll hand it over to Doreen. Ms. Moltz.
All right. Thank you. This is really meant to be just kind of a brief update. I know we had spent a lot of time over the last two meetings in both September 22nd and September 29, talking about really the state budget and the significant impact it was having upon us, primarily in the area of this, the state implementing deferrals of payments, specifically to help right size, if you will, their situation as far as their budget deficit. So last time we came to you, we kind of identified three separate, I want to say, strategies or potential solutions. One of them was working with the California State Finance Authority in the submission of an ASAP application. We are currently in the process of doing that. I've got my last final information that I needed for that application. So that application will, for both El Centro and San Bernardino, will be submitted this week. So we're on target with that. Really, the second layer was the tracking for the exemption application. We are still waiting for the California Department of Education to publish that. Once they publish that, my guess is it'll have a really short timeline. So we'll be on point to submit that. Part of that process, as we spoke about at the last board meetings, was this idea that really in the through the exemption process, the schools need to declare that if it wasn't for the receipt of this exemption, the school would be placed in a really critical financial position, almost financially insolvent. We talked a lot about that impact upon the charters as far as the renewals. Not so much with San Bernardino. We have our renewal. I also believe that San Bernardino authorizer is in a different position than our El Centro authorizer. Our El Centro authorizer, as you're aware, we're getting ready to submit our renewal in the next couple months to be renewed in our El Centro Ballington Academy School. And we really wanted to take some time to talk with Mr. Ledoux about his thoughts and his thought process around Ballington asking for an exemption. I have reached out to Mr. Ledoux. He redirected me to his assistant business person and said, you know, she can help you with whatever you need with the exemption process. When I did share back with her, really, you know, it's really a situation where we need to know, you know, the district's position on this and how it possibly might impact our renewal. She quickly wrote back and said, that's above my pay grade. I'm going to have to refer you back to Mr. Ledoux. So that's kind of where we're at right now. We're kind of playing in that volleying back and forth. Mr. Ledoux is asking me to talk to a business person. She's saying, oh, no. I'm going to put you back to the superintendent. So board members, that's just, I wanted to give you an update. We're working through that right now. Hopefully I can have a discussion with Mr. Ledoux just to kind of see where he is at with the submission of an exemption application to be actually exempted for those deferrals. Again, we know that all of this is going to start happening in February, and then from February on, February, March, April, May through June, they will begin to withhold a certain portion of our funding. Ultimately, the impact on El Centro is close to $1 million, $986,000. The impact on San Bernardino is $608,000, a little bit over $500,000. And so really we're looking at a total need of $1.5 million. Or I want to say really the total impact, should we not get the exemption and relying on these ASAP loans. So really the first two, we're relying on kind of what they've already kind of internally set up, the California Department of Education for charters. The third one was an alternative we thought about going outside of what the what has already been kind of set up for us. And that's really reaching out to foundations and corporations and seeing if any way possible, if they could provide assistance such as a bridge funding option for us. So with that, we were tasked with developing a case statement that we would use out to the foundations. So I have provided you with a copy of that case statement in your board packet. It just begins with, you know, a kind of a summary of what the current landscape is, really what happened. We were kind of assuming, we thought they might know a little bit about the situation, but then, you know, we wanted to kind of bring them up to date, you know, about how the state's current financial situation has impacted the schools. So really it just provides an overview of that. It shares, from an overall perspective, you know, again, the funding, we provided a chart for them about how, you know, schools are historically funded on a regular basis, and then how they will be funded going forward, just to give them a feeling of that. And then we kind of close a little bit of information how it directly impacts a Ballington Academy, specifically we share, you know, the funding amount that we'll need or and how really that this represents 25%, which is huge for the schools to have to work through. And then also just in case they do not know about Ballington Academy, we just give them a little framework of who we are. But for the most part, that would be our case statement that we're planning on taking to the different foundations and corporations to see if they could provide some gap funding for us for that time period. I know we have began to reach out already to some of these foundations, such as AT&T. So we're trying to begin to schedule Zoom meetings with them, even our bank, you know, just to begin to share with them sort of our dilemma and to see if there is any assistance that we could, that they could provide us. We're anticipating, hopefully we know that we have to have a solution in place by at the very latest January, because then of course February kicks in and that really, really throws us into, you know, a significant cash, a cash crisis, because that's ultimately what it will be from February, you know, through the remainder of the year. I open any questions or any feedback or any additional suggestions if something we haven't thought about as a possible solution.
Doreen, if I just might share with the members that what we are approaching both our banks and community foundation and corporations, and I say corporations usually, it's a foundation component within the corporation that we would be appealing to. And what we're discussing, and as you can see in Doreen's statement, is what we are really looking at is a big one. Okay. If you guys like, you can hit mute and you can hear, and it'll cut out some of the background noise. It just is a
sure. FYI, sorry about that.
FYI. One of the things that we are looking at doing is not trying to talk to an enterprise about giving us a loan or going through a grant process. That's not what we're really looking at. we are looking at really if we can create an agreement that basically they will provide bridge funding, and when payments are made by the state, we will just pass those payments directly through to them. So that basically they can see that there is a receivable there, okay, that will be coming to them, and that it is really actually backed up by the, I want to say, the full force of the state of California in terms of it. But that's the way we're approaching it. We think that that might be an easier way to go rather than trying to get someone to make us a loan. A line of credit is not sufficient to even handle the 1.5 deferment issue. And really based on the receivables and the debt ratio, really increasing the line of credit is not going to be a sufficient option because Burlington Community Education Development Corporation didn't qualify for taking the line of credit up from $800,000 to almost double. It just doesn't qualify. So the issue of a bridge loan, we think, might be the most viable strategy. So I just want to kind of let you guys know that that's the approach we're looking at utilizing and why.
So what would the interest rate be, the difference be with a bridge loan versus a line of credit? I mean, you probably couldn't get a line of credit because you already have one, but if you could get the bridge loan.
Right. Well, we're starting to, negotiate the issue in terms of it. If we do it with a foundation, we think that basically their money is in a corpus. And so yet they would be losing some interest on it. So what I would be talking with them about is really making sure that they are held harmless in terms of any loss of their corpus. I'm trying to go at that rather than traditional financing model, Carla, because again, it is something that's being done to us by the state of California. The case statement kind of lays it out. And if they've got a value already around education and children, I'm thinking like AT&T does, it might be a more reasonable reach for them to do something like this. And they're not really trying to make money back. They're just trying not to be harmed in any way. And so that's the strategy I'm using. I'm really not going to the banks because they just see it one way in that regard. So that's why I'm looking at more the foundation path.
Okay. I did follow up with our external auditor as well, just to hear if he had any other alternative options for us. And he did share that it appears that we're on the right path, that we're kind of going the paths that are out there. And then, you know, he did underscore again to please, if we at all possible, can stay away from factoring.
Right.
He has just shared, you know, that every school that has gotten into that process has had a hard time coming out of it. So.
So did they suggest any other way that the other charter schools are doing?
No, he did not. He had shared that we're kind of on that same path as all the other charters are doing. Unlike the last time they did deferrals, this time the state has developed this ASAP program, which is very similar to what the school districts use, their TRANS. They did not have that prior deferral cycle. So charters were forced to go factoring. So this is a better situation to have this time.
Yeah, probably less costly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any other questions around deferment, strategies?
We'll keep you posted. We definitely will keep you posted.
Do I need to play some more lotto?
that would be great, Carla.
I think we all do, right?
That would be great.
Okay. Yeah, I think we all need to win some lotto. Okay, so shall we move on?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Item 6, agenda action items, submission of SB 820 growth application, attachment B.
Board members, I know we've had a lot of discussion on the state budget. Also part of the budget, they had in their initial budget, they had identified that the school's funding was going to be based on what they're calling that February date, going as whatever your enrollment or your ADA was as of February 2020, that would follow you into this year. That would be your funding rate. Many schools took objection to this. Ultimately, long story short, they had put a lawsuit against the state saying that this was not fair, that there are many schools that were planning to have a significant growth this upcoming year, and that they should have a way to be compensated for that significant growth in their enrollment. So as an addendum to the budget, they have developed and have most recently passed what they're calling SB 820. And there's some other components of SB 820, but primarily it talks about an option for schools who potentially might have growth this upcoming year, and for a potential option to receive funding for that growth. Now, they make it very clear that you would have had to, in order to be eligible for this, you would have had to have already budgeted it and have been approved and have it in your approved budget by June 30, 2020, or the growth must have been seen on your second interim from last year. And then they would consider, in fact, looking at those increases and consider funding on that behalf. Now there, I understand there's a complex system as well, because they look at the difference in that, and then they apply a equation to that, a statewide equation that looks at the absenteeism rate as well as the enrollment rate, and then they come up with a value. Ultimately, they did say that no school through this process will be funded less than their February 2020, because that was something I was worried about. You know, what if we submit this application and through all of their analysis and all of their, evaluation and then applying everything, that we come in actually less than our February 2020 rate. They said that would not happen, that we would be guaranteed at least that minimum amount. So I did go ahead, I looked at our second interim, and I looked at what we were approved, what the board approved their budget as of June 30, 2020. The chart before you demonstrates a slight variance, especially, you know, for El Centro, we approved a budget of 274. Our funding rate is at 269. So if the state applies, you know, their formula and it works in our favor, we could be potentially paid for an increased funding rate of about 5. really quickly, that's about $50,000 more, about $10,000 per child. Mm-hmm. San Bernardino is a little bit different. It's a lot more significant. We budgeted for 200. Our funding rate was 187, with a variance of 13, so about 130,000. So at this point, I would ask the board if I could move forward and submit an application at least to be evaluated, to see if we could increase potentially our funding, if not just by a couple of ADAs, but a couple of ADA percentage points would probably help.
Doreen, if it's okay, I have a question. I know that they said that we were guaranteed at least to our P2 of last year. But if we see this to fruition and we are approved, would there be any consequence if we don't hit the approved budget enrollment?
What they will do is they will look at a formula and they will pay based on that formula, is my understanding with that.
Okay.
I know I didn't answer your question, I'm sorry, but that's what I can understand from the law, is that they're gonna take an evaluation and then they're gonna apply a statewide formula and then it pay basically whatever is lesser of the two.
Okay, my guess is that part of that formula would be current attendance rate.
They'll look at October 7, 2020. And pay you based on the lesser of the amount. The state will apply a formula and schools will be paid the lesser of the budgeted amount or the actual on census day, October 7.
Well, Doreen, if they're using the October 7, 2020 number, then basically, I mean, you aren't you capped?
We're pretty much capped because our numbers were lower on that than what we had budgeted.
Right, okay.
So we would defer to the February 2020 funding rate.
Right.
So the 269 and 187, right?
Correct, yep. Which is what our current budget represents, the revised budget that was approved in August.
Well, I guess, thank God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know I'm submitting it based on a long shot. So I can leave that up to, you know, if we want to not submit or submit. But it's a simple application. It's a spreadsheet where you put in numbers and then submit.
It doesn't seem like there's any drawback to not submitting or to submitting, you know. I don't see any big drawbacks, do you?
I don't see any big drawbacks. My major concern was if they didn't guarantee us to be paid on the February 2020. That was when I was like, oh, I'm going to keep us there at least. Looking at our.
But they said that they would. Is that, am I understanding that right? They said that they would?
Okay. Yeah. All right. They said that no school will be paid less than their February 2020 funding.
Got amount. It. Okay.
I know.
Yeah, I don't see any drawback in it. Does anyone else see any?
No.
Okay. Do we need a motion then to?
Yes.
Okay. I'll make that motion to submit the SB 820. You said you're submitting the application for review, like it's not the final submittal. Is that correct?
For review of them looking at our numbers and then seeing if we're eligible.
Oh, okay. All right. So I'll I'll move to submit the SB 820 growth application.
I'll second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Yep. Roll okay. call vote.
We roll kind call. Of,
Carla?
Yep.
Denise?
Yes.
Christy?
Yes.
Motion passes. And again, it's a long shot, but I always said, like, even with our ACES funding, we for El Centro, we kept submitting, and then finally we were funded. I know, very different situation, but
I think that's great.
Chance.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll go ahead and move on to item 7, consent agenda action items. I knew I'd get it out. The first one is the approval of the September minutes, September 22nd, 2020, which is attachment C. Oh, and September 29th, 2020. I'll move to approve those.
Thank you.
Does anyone want a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Roll call.
Christy.
Aye.
I'm sorry. I went reversed. Carla.
Yes.
And Denise.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay. And then for attachment D, do we need discussion of this? Or is this what we already discussed?
These are the board, the August financials for both Ballington El Centro and Ballington San Bernardino. Both schools ended in a slightly positive for the month. August incurred more expenses because that's historically, as with other years, more so this year though. That was when all the expenses for all of the Chromebooks hit, all of the IT support services that went into that, as well as, you know, purchasing the Google education, all of those many factors played. So our books and supplies were a little bit higher for the month of August. One thing of note also for Ballington San Bernardino, we had written to our national office to get a grant specifically to purchase some Chromebooks, and that was an amount of $24,990. So that is reflected in the actual revenue at the local level as well. That helped offset some of the purchases of the Chromebooks. That was a specific grant for that. And with that, I'll just entertain any additional questions or an approval or acceptance of the financials.
I don't have any questions.
No, I don't either.
Okay. Well, I move to approve the August 2020 financials for El Centro and San Bernardino.
I'll second. All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Okay, roll call.
Christy?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
And Denise?
Okay, motion carried.
Okay.
Item 8, board discussion items. Ms. Moltz, Doreen?
Yes. So board members, I had prepared for you just a brief information report, as well as an opportunity for us to give you an update on how remote learning is going or any specific COVID issues around some of our learning in September. So what you have before you is just a brief report. I showed our budgeted enrollment for both El Centro and San Bernardino. I showed our actual enrollment. And as you can see, we're struggling with hitting our budgeted enrollment at this point in both schools. I also compared our budgeted ADA to our actual ADA. Likewise, with the reduced enrollment, our ADA is also reduced. Going forward, I will provide you, if we were in a hybrid situation, I was going to provide you how many were in remote and how many were in hybrid. Right now, we're still 100% all remote. So that makes sense that whatever our enrollment is, that would be the number in our remote. I also just provided you with a little bit of information about how many students we have in our special education services, just kind of as an FYI for you to see that. Any questions on that? I know a huge piece of what we will be talking about is enrollment. I know we're kind of capped as far as funding goes this year, based on, you know, our prior discussion this evening, but really to begin talking about how can we build up enrollment even for, you know, thinking ahead for next year as well, because I feel like sometimes, you know, your enrollment, you get on a momentum. And if you want to keep building and building and building, and oftentimes if there is a slight dip, it's extremely challenging to get that momentum up again to keep it at a higher number. So
Doreen, if I can jump in, I can say, I know this is true for Mr. Anderson as well. It's our kindergartners that the enrollment got hit. And just very anecdotally, the parents that I've spoken to made a conscious decision that they were going to keep their children home for their kindergarten year because they didn't want their child's first year in school to be distance learning. So my prediction is that when we start enrollment again for the 21-22 school year, we're going to see all those kindergartners come either to repeat their kindergarten year or to enter first grade, plus the new kindergartners. But again, that's a prediction and it's anecdotal. But again, that's what we're seeing here in San Bernardino.
And I also hear, you know, talking to other counties as well, even San Diego, they were sharing that their enrollment, I was on a call with San Diego County Office of Ed the other day, and they were sharing that their enrollment in kindergarten was also significantly down. So I think it's a county-wide, so to speak, or multiple county-wide trends that families are not sending their kindergartners to school. And they had specifically said our kindergarten classes, our TK classes are, you know, significantly under enrolled.
Doreen, if I might just share an observation, and that is that both schools have historically had enrollment issues and challenges. In the first year or so, definitely San Bernardino did well in that regard in terms of moving forward. But I mean, I think we're going to have to look at this kind of going forward. We are competing with other schools for students. And I think that the natural organic strategy is good, but I think it's not necessarily sufficient. In Imperial, we have really struggled to get to 300 and definitely to get over 300. And I think we have to be really focused going forward in our budgeting process next year that we have to have a part-time recruiter for both schools. I mean, I think we have to really look at that very seriously. Principals have their hands full and teachers have their hands full, and relying on word of mouth is good, but we have to, I think, be more intentional going forward.
I'm kind of surprised we don't have a recruiter. Part-time.
I think for one reason or the other, the issue has kind of fell to the principals for being the spokespersons, but I just think that it's too big an issue, along with teacher training, observations, student issues to deal with, and curriculum, and on and on and on. So I'm just going to, you know, suggest that each school be focused on having a part-time at a minimum. I don't necessarily know that it's a full-time, but at a minimum, a part-time recruiter to generate student population to get our enrollment numbers up. And often, and I don't know whether or not it's even something to be considered, but a parent rather than, or something of that nature, someone that basically works and navigates at the level where other parents of children really are operating, rather than going out and get a part-time social worker to talk about enrollment. I mean, I just think we've got to be more intentional going forward. So enough said, but I know I will be looking at that very significantly as we get into our budgeting process for next year.
I think that we probably, if there's any savings in our budget this year, I feel like that enrollment for next year starts January, February of this year. So really right. Beginning to look at it this year, if there's any way, you know, if there's any cost savings that we could even begin, you know, a temporary something for this year to really knowing that kind of the work and the foundation we lay in January, February is going to really impact us for the following school year. Right. I know that when San Bernardino was first started, we actually used that strategy of a parent that was supported by a staff person as well. But we did have a parent that helped us recruit us also.
What's the recruiting, just curious, what's the recruiting forum? Is it, I guess now it would have to be online, but did people go door to door? Did you go to community functions? How does that work?
Everything. I think, we did presentations at preschools. We left out door knockers. We advertised in the paper.
Yeah.
Tried to do articles. We even put in place sort of a refer a parent or refer a, and, then all of those names were put in a drawing. And then those parents, you know, we did a drawing and that parent received a special incentive. So just many, many different strategies. We have found, honestly, parent referrals work the best. It's just word of mouth, you know, a parent, we, you know, attend the community events and we can talk about the school, but if the parent is there talking about the school, you know, the parents just seem to be much more responsive to that than us as an administrator kind of pushing. Of course, we're going to say it's a good school, right? But it really, really the messaging of the parents has done a tremendous job. And San Bernardino, and I'm really hoping that El Centro benefits from this as well. San Bernardino was fortunate. We had already a system of preschool services and early Head Start services. So that really helped create a feeder system for a lot of our families and our charter school. And, you know, our charter school is co-located with our preschool program and our early Head Start program. And so really that kind of awareness and that ability to offer that family that continuity of services, one kind of drop off in the morning, has helped out tremendously in San Bernardino. El Centro, we had for the last couple of years a home-based program, which also helped provide a feeder system. We now are just really beginning to build up our preschool program there. We got the new facility on Imperial Avenue that can serve, you know, fully operational, close to 400 preschoolers. I'm hoping that too, as that evolve, can serve as a support system also for Ballington Academy El Centro.
And you know, I think this parent recruiter is for both. I mean, I think it's for preschool and as well as your charter school. for priming the pump and getting people kind of flowing through your preschools and into your charter schools. So, I mean, I think we just have to think about it. One of the big issues is consistency. I mean, you can do something and then not do it for a while and you lose the momentum to it. So, I mean, I think having it as a intentional role and function, I think that's going to be absolutely the key.
Any other questions or feedback? As far as COVID related issues, we're still responding to some of the state's requirements this year is around, attendance and tracking weekly participation. We actually are just now working with our student information system. They have unveiled, so to speak, their ability to be able to track all these new requirements by the state. So just sort of from an administrative operational perspective, just making sure we've got those systems in place, again, to be able to track all of these different nuances that the state has given us this year. Again, we're tracking in each county the levels of the COVID illnesses, as well as how the state now has their own special system, color codes. So again, we're tracking that. We're also keeping a close eye on what our authorizers are doing at this point. And then based on that, we will begin, to consider next steps. I know that both, Shannon, myself, and Bill are going to be getting together even over like the next couple weeks to begin to discuss what, a hybrid program might possibly look like. We have fleshed out the model, but now really to begin to talk about, okay, if our authorizers move to open, in January or February, what does that look like to us? And what are the things that we're going to actually have to do to be ready for that? Shannon, any other kind of additional? I know a lot of it's been focused on trying to respond to all of the new state requirements, but.
Truer words never spoken. I think Doreen just nailed kind of everything. We are starting to have the discussions about specific steps to move from 100% remote to hybrid. And we're just working really, really hard to support the teachers so they can stay on top of that attendance issue and the engagement log and make sure that it's compliant because it's a little bit complex for anyone to wrap their head around what the state is asking for. So I think that that's a big part of where my focus is to support the teachers to make sure that's accurate.
In our student information system, just, we were responsible for tracking all of this since September. Our student information system actually just, the programming was just finalized this last week. So we'll begin to see how we can utilize that as well to be able to track all of this.
And I, to be honest, I'm a little bit nervous about that because the poor teachers, it took quite a while to get that balance of the instructional model plus the engagement tracking. And they sort of finally got into a groove and they get it and they know what to do. I'm a little bit nervous to say, guess what? We're changing it up. You're going to do it all in synergy now. So I think that will be a pretty big discussion Doreen, Bill, and I will have. I know that one of our goals is to make sure that we are consistent between the two schools. So we're not going to blindside anybody.
And I believe some of the bugs or the hiccups with Google Education are finally working themselves mm-hmm. out. So I think overall over the last couple of weeks, I think it's been a little bit more steady.
Yes, I agree.
Okay. Hey.
Not easier, but steady.
Steady. And I also feel like there's been less, I want to say webinars or regulations from the state being kind of thrown at you to have to try to weed through. So again, it feels a little bit more stabilized.
And I think the panic that everybody felt has eased, because everybody has at least a semblance of understanding of what we need to do, how we need to do it, steps to take, and resources to go to if we're struggling.
Okay.
So then the next topic is officer election process. And I feel like we just did this, but we're up for it again. So I wanted to talk with the board about kind of how you want to move forward with this or our process. I know we have 3 board members and we've already combined 2 of the officers, 2 of the positions into 1. So that kind of leaves a board member with a position. So I wanted to kind of hear your feedback on kind of our process and so which kind of way to go with this.
What's your concern, Lorraine? I mean, where are you trying to get to?
Yeah, what are the options?
Well, we have
what do you have in mind?
We have to vote in.
Way to get to it.
Yeah, we have to vote in. Each member serves a year, and that's January to December. So we normally have our elections or our slate in October or November. So basically we have an option for a chair, a vice chair, a treasurer, and a secretary. So we have 3 board members with 3 positions. So I wanted to hear process if you wanted me to recommend a slate, if a board member wants to take the role in recommending a slate. I don't know if there's a lot of options at this point.
Christy, are you willing to run another year?
I am willing to do whatever position will be most beneficial. And if holding fast, you know, through the next year is the right thing to do, I'm fine with that.
And I can do the same thing too, so.
That sounds good to me. Do we need a motion, yeah, Doreen?
What I will do is, it sounds like we have an idea of a slate. So what I'll do is I'll bring forward that slate at the next board meeting, and then we can have an official vote on that. So what I'm hearing really is chairs Christy, vice chairs Denise, and then Carla is treasurer / secretary, essentially the same as what we have this year.
Good. Thank you, ladies.
Thanks. Yes, that works.
Yes, yes. Very, very much.
Okay.
See, Doreen, that was pretty easy this year, huh?
Easy. I know. I remember last year we had a phone call and we had to like do a whole process, right?
Less is more. Less is more.
Just got to say what you want.
Well, I was like, well, there's 3 positions, 3 board members.
Yeah, but now we really need to work on getting more board members, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we always said, you know, before when we were just a little bit bigger, that we still swapped, you know, them around. And so now this year is really where everybody gets a position, I guess.
You know, and I think one of the things you may want to think about, Doreen, is and Christy and other members of the board, is that a lot of times folks, particularly when they come on new, they don't feel that they've got enough experience, enough of a feel to take on a role. And so it may very well be with regard to bringing someone in that we create a buddy system of sort to maybe have that person, kind of work with Christy on a couple of board meetings where that person basically co-chairs a board meeting so that people get comfortable, kind of in a role. And see, it's not all of that, because sometimes it just scares folk in terms of it. But I think that will be important as we bring new people in, get them engaged, get them doing something in terms of it. Get them working with Carla in terms of creating a team that looks at the finances in depth. And we don't have committees, but we can get people kind of engaged and working. And I think they will then be much more amenable to assuming responsibility in a leadership fashion if we do that.
Well, I guess that took care of that.
Yep, thank you.
That's it.
The last item, board members, last time we talked about having a agreed upon script or statement to our public in response to, Ballington Academy's response to the public regarding COVID. So I took a moment just to draft out a couple of paragraphs that potentially you could use as a uniform statement to the public. And I just wanted to get some of your feedback on it. Again, I open up with a very, very, general statement about the pandemic and its impact on society, and how it's forced us to rethink everything, and that it's given us, though, an opportunity to be creative and innovative at the same time. I do share that we're committed to providing a safe and robust education. At the same time, our primary priority is going to be the health and safety of our staff, children, families, and the community we serve. And then I just reiterate, as from the very beginning, Ballington will continue to take the lead of our, the guidance of the local health department, the state, as well as our authorizer as it, relates to the actual delivery of our instructional services.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I think it's a good statement.
Okay. Thank you. And we did have a parent did write a letter sharing her concern about remote learning and how it's not the best approach, and how stores are open, so why can't schools be as well? So I actually responded to her concerns with pretty much, I acknowledged her concerns, but I did use pretty much the same statement so that we can be consistent in our messaging.
Well, thank you for doing this.
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you.
Okay. Do we have any closing comments? Okay. Hearing none. Our date, time, and location of next meeting, Zoom, November 17th, 5:30. And with that, we'll adjourn the meeting, 7:02.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, guys.
Nice seeing you all.